What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hey guys, this is Jen.
And I'm Daryl. Welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. Today we have a very exciting show. Today we are interviewing the man behind the brand of Article One, Mr. Wes Studi. Wes, how are you doing today, sir?
Very good. I'm excited to join you guys on this podcast. Thanks for inviting me.
So Wes, tell us about yourself. How did you get into eyewear?
Well, actually, when I was a senior in college, I became extremely passionate about vitamin A deficiency and vitamin A supplementation in developing countries. I learned that about 500,000 children go blind each year from vitamin A deficiency, and half of those kids die within 12 months as a result of the deficiency. So I was obviously astounded by that, as anyone is. But really why I became passionate was because it costs just $1 for a year's worth of supplements for one child. And that's where I became very passionate, is because, you know, I've always been a pragmatic person, and but I've also always wanted to do good. And I saw this the opportunity to have a large impact with just $1. Your $1 is having a very large impact. And so I thought of, you know, when I was a senior looking at what I wanted to do with my life, I thought of ways I could have an impact on vitamin A supplementation. And, you know, this was at the time of when Tom's Shoes was kind of at its height of popularity within college campuses and everything. And that business model really inspired me to start an eyewear brand, where I would be donating a portion of every purchase to Helen Keller International, which is, you know, who we've been partnered with since the beginning. We are still partnered with them, and we make our donations quarterly to Helen Keller International. And it's been going great so far.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. You know, anything involving vitamin A deficiency along with optometry and eyewear, you know, that's just something that we love in general. What does the name Article One mean?
Yeah, actually, that came from a very long brainstorming session, where we wanted to stick with something that had the letter A at the front. So that's where the beginning of our brainstorming session came into play. It was, the A obviously symbolizes vitamin A, and that's always been our symbol. So through that brainstorming session, we also wanted to still have a very subtle symbol of kind of just our corporate philosophy of doing good. And so Article One came from reading through the United Nations website. And then I hopped on to the Declaration of Human Rights, which is, you can find on the United Nations website. And it's Article One of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which basically states that, you know, all men are created equal, and everyone should treat everyone in brotherly love. And I should probably memorize it, but it's that's a subtle symbol of our philosophy.
That's one hell of a story. I really love that.
So it's really great to be able to say, well, I want to do this thing to give back. But I mean, how did you go about actually making and designing glasses? Because I feel like a lot of people have these lofty goals, but actually making a product can be a barrier. So how did you actually physically make your product?
Yeah, it was a lot of naivete and passion and a lot of failures. You know, we've been going at this for 4 years, and we've seen a lot of success over the last 18 months, and we have, you know, been lucky enough to really start, begin working with and partnering with a lot of amazing optometrists throughout the country. But those first couple of years was a lot of testing and failure. You know, when I was a senior, I started, you know, writing the business plan, and I was reaching out to anyone I could reach out to in the optical world. And this is me not knowing anything about eyewear. I started this out of sheer passion for vitamin A without any experience in the optical industry. And I reached out to some designers. I reached out to factories, and when I started the brand, it was just completely different brand than we are now. So, and that's something that I always tell young entrepreneurs, like, you're never going to be where you want to be when you launch. Just start going and fail and do your best not to go out of business, basically, and just keep working to improve and keep the vision of what you want to become in your mind and keep working towards that. And so I would, you know, back in the first days, it was me sketching out ideas of eyewear, working with established designers to execute the actual tech drawing, and working with factories. And obviously, like, when you compare that brand that we were then to what we are now, it's embarrassing to me a little bit. But at the same time, like, people, you know, like, we made progress day in and day out, and it's gotten us to where we are now.
So would you consider yourself kind of like a luxury frame line at this point?
Yeah, we consider ourselves to be producing quality that comparable to any luxury brand on the market. But we sell our glasses, we wholesale our glasses at $85. And, you know, so retail, if you do a 3x markup, that's $265. And we chose that. We have a much lower margin than probably any of our competitors. And we decided to do that because, one, as a cause-driven brand, we wanted our name and philosophy to get out and be accessible to a larger portion of the market. But two, also, we want more people to be able to access that independent eyewear market. You know, we're very, very passionate about independent eyewear and independent optometry. A lot of times, there's a large jump between conglomerate eyewear to independent eyewear in the terms of price point, and sometimes in terms of style. And we wanted to be what we call ourselves, the gateway drug to independent eyewear. We want someone who's used to buying Luxottica to, you know, we respect all of the other independent eyewear brands out there, and there, a lot of them are our heroes. So if someone's not necessarily ready to take that step to Salt or Barton Pereira, they can partake in a similar brand. I don't want to say similar, and, you know, obviously we try and do our own thing, but the quality is very similar, taste and everything, but we try and stay accessible.
So Wes, let's dig a little deeper into the brand. Tell me about where your headquarters are located at, how many employees do you have, and where are your glasses actually made?
We are headquartered in my hometown of Flint, Michigan. I actually launched the brand in Chicago 4 years ago, you know, because I did what all Michigan college grads do, and they moved to Chicago, basically.
Beautiful place.
It is. I love Chicago a lot. But after a little while, you know, my hometown was calling, and I had an opportunity to move myself back. And this was still when we were basically, you know, just a startup, a couple people. And we moved to Flint, and that's actually when everything started clicking. We started to become the brand that we had always dreamed of becoming. And we love working and living in Flint. It means a lot to us to work within a tight-knit community. And obviously, like, people know Flint to be one that's faced challenges for decades. And that, again, it just adds another element of a reason to get up in the morning and work hard. We love being in Flint, and we have 4 full-time employees, 2 part-time employees, and 2 outside reps selling our glasses. My business partner is Cole Sanseverino. A lot of optometrists around the country know him because he's out there making friends and selling our glasses. We have a creative director, Maggie, and our main account manager is Jennifer, and all of our accounts will know Jennifer because she's on the phone with them every day. So, yeah, it's pretty fun.
And your glasses are manufactured in Michigan or elsewhere?
One day. Hopefully, we're actually hoping to manufacture in Flint one day. But our glasses are manufactured in northern Italy, about an hour north of Venice. It's called the province of Belluno and Treviso. It's couple towns, like a couple of different factories, but they're both very small. And that's something that we're really proud of and excited about, is like the main factory that does 80 to 90% of the process is only 12 people work there. You know, if you go to our website, article1eyewear.com, there's a tab, Know Your Frames, and we produce a video showing the production process. And it's mostly done at that factory. And it's really, really cool because what we're trying to do is shorten the gap between, close the gap between the end customer, like the optometrist patient, and our manufacturing process. We want someone to feel when they buy our glasses, we want them to feel like they know the people who made them. They know that the people who handmade these glasses are living a great life in Northern Italy in the mountains. The where the factory is like, it's a 2000 person town, tiny little farm town in the mountains of Northern Italy. It's beautiful.
How often do you get to visit there?
When I went to Mito in last week of February, first week of March this year, and after Mito went and visited the factory, and that's when we produced the film. And then I'm going back first week of September, so pretty excited about that. It's not a bad deal to have work trips to Italy.
Yeah, I bet. I can imagine.
I noticed there are some companies that are starting to bring their facilities to the States. For example, State Optical, and I know you mentioned that earlier. What intrigues you to bring the company back to Flint to actually manufacture the eyewear? Because I noticed a lot of companies, they like to say that their eyewear is handmade in France or Italy or Japan. So what's the allure of the United States in particular?
In terms of where it's made, I think there are many places around the world where your frames can be made with amazing care and craftsmanship. Any Western Europe country, if it's an established factory, they're going to be doing great work. Japan does amazing work. Obviously, most American factories do amazing work. The real reason why I want to bring production to Flint is because Flint needs jobs, and also because we have the raw resources to facilitate production. I mean, Flint has been a manufacturing town since 1900 and earlier. And so we have plenty of resources to facilitate that. We just have to take the leap. And we're trying to do it in the most intelligent manner. That's why we're not moving as quickly. I mean, I see a lot of eyewear companies kind of moving as fast as possible to start U.S. production because it is kind of a fad right now. And not a bad one. You know, fads aren't always bad. It's a good thing that it's popular. But people are moving very quickly into it. And I just want to do it in the most intelligent manner.
So let's tell us a little bit about your design process. It sounds like you have a design background. How do you go about designing what the eyewear looks like each year for your line?
Yeah, well, at this point, I'm really, really happy because, you know, back in when I first started, it was a lot of me talking to myself, basically, of what did I want the brand to look like and the eyewear to look like. And now with a team around me, we can focus. Also, it's nice that, you know, we used to do things a lot more last minute. Because when you're like a single entrepreneur working alone, you're basically doing everything by the seat of your pants. And now with a team surrounding me, we plan at least a year out with future designs, with production, color choices. You know, we've done a really great job of creating a diverse collection of frames that bring value to an optical board. And so for a while there, we were trying to fill gaps in our collection of sizing, of style, and now we're actually now trying to tighten up, basically, of we now know our brand so well, we want everything has to fit within our brand. And so we're spending the next year or two really tightening up, not any deleting anything from our collection, but tightening up choices we make. So that might mean deleting a color and choosing a substitute color in its place that fits our brand better. And that means any additional models that we bring in, have to speak perfectly to our brand voice and imagery. Some of the I'm really excited about the designs we've had bringing out over the next year. We have a Windsor collection coming out this fall. We'll be debuting it at Vision West, and then they'll be shipped to stores probably October or November. And those are going to be metal frames with Windsor acetate wrap fronts. We'll have four of those models coming out that are going to be pretty amazing. I'm really excited about those. And then next spring, we have a collaboration with a clothing designer coming out, kind of thin acetate frames coming out. I'm really excited about the direction the design process is going. And to speak to the processes now with you, like I said, I have a team surrounding me. Maggie, our creative director, really drives a lot of the design process. And we've been working with a fantastic independent designer that's based in New York, and she has been doing an amazing job. And so having a team working together is so much better than, you know, what it used to be of just me.
You don't want to drop any hints about who you're collabing with?
No, not yet.
Okay. We're excited for you.
You know, one thing that I really love about your brand are the names of your frames. Can you please elaborate on how you come up with these names?
Yeah. Our current names have been coming from, you know, it started with, again, having a subtle hint towards our cause of vitamin A supplementation, and so we named them after countries where Helen Keller International is doing vitamin A supplementation. So if you go to hki.org, which is their website, and you go to vitamin A at the page, you'll see that like our names for our frames come from the countries where they are currently doing supplementation. And now as we continue to grow, really is just always going to be names that mean something to us, that authentically mean something to us. A few of our new frames are named after lakes in Michigan. And so we're going to be doing a lot of Michigan based naming or symbolism as we grow, because that's just, you know, we just want it to mean something without getting in the way of the actual frame itself. We want the name to mean something to us.
So if an OD is considering adding your frame line to their board, I mean, what would you tell that doc about who the patient is that's going to wear your frames?
I generally say that, you know, I think a lot of docs, right when they see our brand, they immediately think, oh, they just think millennial. Like that just, the name just jumps out. And they think it's only for young people. I do think that really the core of our data definitely supports this is the core of our buyers are definitely in the older segment of millennials. You know, because we are targeting people who care more about quality and style than they do about price point. If someone cares more about price point, they're gonna probably buy Warby Parker. We are going after the people who have evolved past Warby Parker and care more about an authentic, high quality brand. That's kind of where we come in, as that graduation. And so as someone who's like 30 to 35 is really like the core, but we have success selling to a lot of middle-aged people, because we do, that's where, like, you know, we try and fill in the gaps of style and sizing. But yeah, I mean, 30 to 40 is definitely our core customer. Someone who really cares about quality, someone who dresses well at the price point of 250, 260, it's not a cost limiting factor at all to any customer.
How many stores are you in roughly in the United States or worldwide?
Right now, we're in about 120 stores in the U.S., but that's growing, depending on the month, 10 to 20 new stores per month. The last 6 months have been crazy, and it's been fun. You know, it was a lot of slow growth for a long time, and then we, like I said, kind of figured out exactly what we wanted to become. The team that we have on board, with Jennifer, who's our account manager, and Cole, who's our director of sales, take such good care of our accounts, of our optometrists, independent optometrists, that the word of mouth is now spreading, which has been really fun. And we want optometrists to get value out of our brand. We want to help them make money. And we want to treat them with the utmost respect. And so with that kind of word of mouth going around, it's been good.
So Wes, what would you say to a customer who is thinking about shopping online? I mean, why should they buy quality eyewear?
When some of the online direct-to-customer brands launched, five or six years ago, and then a wave launched, over the last 5 years, there was a major mistake they made in their marketing campaign, and that was to kind of vilify optometrists and opticians as the ones that were charging too much for frames. And I understand there is a good argument to be made about when one or two companies has such large control over a market, they're able to produce frames for, between $5 and $10. And then when they control everything from factory to retail, they can mark up to $300 for the frame, even though it was a $5 to $10 frame. I understand that argument. There are problems with our industry of inefficiencies in our industry. But they made the major mistake of throwing that blame on the people who are experts, who are providing medical exams, who, and not even to if we even don't talk about optometrists, who it is obvious their expertise and their education, but even just to discuss opticians, who are experts in their own right in providing the best customer service, in fitting a medical instrument to you, and providing a lifetime of care, really, because if you buy a pair of Barton Pereiras for X amount of dollars, you're going to be able to go back to that independent optical shop for the rest of the lifetime of that frame and get the best customer service. What you get when you buy from a direct-to-customer brand that doesn't have any involvement in the independent optometry world is really just inauthenticity. It's a disconnect. And so you're spending money not on just on obviously higher quality frames when you go to an independent optometrist. You're spending money on service and an experience and a lifetime of care. So it's just what, I guess it's what you value. So it's, if you value local, independent, small businesses and customer service and quality product, there's a lot more to be valued right there than there is on just cost. That's my views. I'm not, and I don't think in direct to customer is like evil. It's just something that came out of the inefficiencies of our industry. And I think there are ways to fix it, because obviously online shopping is the future through, it is the future. So like there are ways to fix it, but it has to involve independent optometry.
So talking a little bit more about your vitamin A deficiency platform, with each purchase of a frame, how much money actually goes to Helen Keller International?
We donate $2 from every pair we sell. Actually, every pair that leaves our inventory, we donate $2 to Helen Keller International. And that seems like a small amount of money compared to the entire frame purchase, but it's a year's worth of supplements for two children for every frame that leaves our inventory. And we've donated a little over $15,000 at this point. And so you could look at that as 15,000 children have received vitamin A supplements, a year's worth of supplements.
That's great.
From our donation. So it's growing and growing. Obviously, every quarter, we're donating more and more every quarter.
And Wes, where do you see Article One going in the future?
I definitely have grand plans for the brand itself, but where we see in the immediate future is continuing to produce digital content surrounding our supply chain, because we want to educate optometrists and customer about why they should be spending $300 versus $95 on these handmade frames made in Italy, why the care and craftsmanship that went into these frames make them higher quality, or more authentic. And producing more and more digital content around our independent optometrists that fit right into that same storyline of why the care and quality from those independent optometrists make a difference. And so we're trying to produce content that really connects an end customer to the people hand making their frames and to the people doing eye exams, and just shrinks that gap between all people within our chain.
Well, Wes, I have to say, optometry needs to love you like crazy and support your company, because that is really inspiring. How you want to tie craftsmanship to our profession. I think that's something that's really missing in optometry right now, as we're struggling with a little bit of an identity crisis as refractive technologies are coming online. And teaming up together with quality product is a great way for independent optometrists to have a future. I totally agree with you. Well, thank you so very much, Wes. It was an honor to have you on. And tell the people, how can we get your contact information if an optometrist is listening to this podcast and knows they want to reach out about adding you to their frame board?
Oh, yeah, for sure. They can go to article1eyewear.com. That's a one with O-N-E. And if you go to our contact page, it's wes@article1eyewear.com or cole@article1eyewear.com. And we would love to speak with you about how we can support your practice and work with you.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast. And remember, we keep it 2020 around here. Pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.